has decided not to seek another term. Both sought anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. They did not say why Ryan has decided not to run. Congressman Ryan was first elected to Congress in 1998. He was elected House Speaker in 2015 after former House Speaker John Boehner retired. He was former GOP presidential nominee Mitt Romney's running mate in 2012. Ryan has a wife and three children. He lives in Janesville. WGTD Sports and Weather just ahead of the morning show. Baseball, the Brewers lost to St. Louis 5-3 in 11 innings. Cubs lose their home opener to the Pirates 8-5. The White Sox lost to Tampa Bay 6-5. Brewers and Cardinals again this afternoon at St. Louis. Cubs and Pirates at Wrigley tonight. The White Sox take on Tampa Bay again this afternoon in Chicago. The NBA, the Bucks and Bulls off last night. Tonight, the Bucks play in Philadelphia. The Bulls host the Detroit Pistons. Now that forecast from the National Weather Service. For this Wednesday, the 11th, partly sunny, breezy and mild, a high of 57. Right now, wind from the southwest at 15, 40 degrees, both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for WGTD also comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. Newly reimagined for 2018, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information available at jackandrea.com. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I have to say, this is a stressful week for me on the morning show because I have two different college presidents, both my bosses, to host. And, of course, it's actually a great, great pleasure and privilege to do so. Today, the president of Carthage College, Dr. John Swallow. And on Friday, it will be Dr. Brian Albrecht, the president here at Gateway Technical College. So it has been an exciting week of morning shows, which included on Monday a Holocaust survivor, yesterday a very special visitor to Carthage from the University of Michigan, and tomorrow Nan Calvert will join us with her monthly environmental program. So I'm glad that we have an especially rich offering of morning shows today, and I'm especially excited to be able to speak with Dr. Swallow for the second time. He became Carthage's 23rd president last summer, and we had a nice conversation not too long after he had moved to town and begun work at Carthage, but now we speak on the eve of his inauguration, which is going to be occurring on Saturday, April 21st, so a week from this Saturday. So it's propitious timing for us to have him here to not only talk about all the excitement that surrounds his upcoming inauguration, but what he has experienced in these first, 9 months or so on the job, and his hopes and dreams for Carthage for the future. Dr. John Swallow, we welcome you back to the morning show.
So glad to be with you, Greg.
Thank you for joining us. I know your schedule is incredibly busy, and especially must be as the inauguration approaches. Let's actually start right there and just kind of talk about the way in which Carthage is choosing to commemorate this occasion and give our listeners at least a general sense of all that has been planned.
Sure. Well, for me, this is one of those opportunities where Carthage can celebrate its long history, to be excited about what it has done in the past and to think about what it can do in the future. And so there will be some speakers, some former colleagues of mine. There'll be a novelist who will come. There will be a mathematician who's also a mime. There's a friend who's a college president and a friend who's a former college president. It was actually the college president at Davidson College when I first started, and so he'll be speaking. But we'll also be featuring students in several musical groups, the Carthage Choir, the Wind Orchestra, the Carthage Philharmonic, and we'll even have some students as part of the ceremony singing something from Into the Woods, the musical that's being produced this spring. And so for me, yes, at some level it is about me. I understand that, but it's really about Carthage and celebrating its ride into the future.
Can you describe to our listeners what is going to be happening actually at the ceremony itself, the inauguration itself on Saturday the 21st? What will that service or ceremony include?
Well, we'll certainly be welcoming lots of guests, all of those who are a part of Carthage who have decided to commemorate the event with us. There will be an formal installation, which I understand, since I haven't gone through this myself. There will be a presidential medallion that I think I will still be able to stand after I'm wearing. We'll see how heavy it is. Friend and mentor John McArdle, who's the president at Sewanee, will give some remarks, and then I will give some remarks, and then otherwise we will have some wonderful musical reflections during the ceremony.
Sounds like a great time. And again, we have all these other events that are going on, and all of these other events are completely free and open to the public for
Absolutely.
Anybody who wants to take them in. And before the hour is done, we'll give you an opportunity to talk about some of those in a bit more detail. We had our first conversation last summer, not long after you began at Carthage, and so we shouldn't plow all of that ground again, at least as thoroughly as we did the first time around. But particularly for the sake of anybody who did not hear that first conversation, maybe you could give us sort of the sketchier version of particularly your professional path that ultimately led you to Carthage.
Sure. Well, I'm the son of a college professor and a mother who's a musician, a music teacher, and at other points of her life, an alcohol and drug abuse counselor, very varied. And I would say that I grew up loving math, loving to read, loving to play music, although I consider myself an amateur, and really enjoying the prospect of helping others with that. So I was tutoring some students even in high school. And so somehow the son of teachers and interested in certain academic subjects, then I pursued a path of majoring in math and majoring in English, making the difficult decision that I would go on in math. I had to choose something, and spent years teaching at Davidson College in the math department, but also in the interdisciplinary humanities program, which was a way to get back to my English major. And it was only in the last 6 years, thanks to an invitation from John McArdle, that I decided to try out an administrative position, which has turned out to be a great fit for me, but one that I didn't really understand might be. So he gave me kind of a year trial, which was a gift. And so that's really brought me to where I am today.
Very good. I want to circle back to the matter of English versus math, or English and math, but really we often tend to think of those things as polar opposites, that the world has a lot of math majors in it and a lot of English majors in it, and never the twain shall meet, just because, particularly at a glance, they seem like entirely different planets, if not universes. How do you explain your fascination with and love of both? And are they in fact separate universes as much as we sometimes think of them, or are we making a mistake there in characterizing those fields in that way?
Well, I would begin by saying that, yes, there are certainly some differences in terms of the subject matter. Mathematics is certainly about things that are fixed, things that can be real or imaginary. And there are many, many systems. I think of mathematics as an enormous system. And then when you study literature, it's less about systems. It's more about people. It's more about their backgrounds. It's more about their stories, the narrative. So at a level of content, they may be different. However, when you do the work of trying to understand something, trying to analyze it, you have to have some creative thoughts. You have to have some hypotheses along the way. Is this really how these things fit together? And you can do that when you're doing mathematical research, and you can do the same sort of thinking when you're trying to understand a short story or a novel, Your first ideas may not be right. There can be some evidence along the way, and you can have a discussion with someone. And so in that sense, I've found that literary criticism and mathematical research are simply not as far apart as people think.
Hmm. You obviously loved teaching, and then, as you've touched on, found yourself actually drawn into this other thing of administrative work within an academic institution, and it proved to be actually quite a good fit. What do you think are your own personal characteristics that make it such a good fit, that not only equip you to function successfully and thrive, but also allow you to enjoy such work that a lot of other people do not enjoy at all?
Right. Well, I will start by saying that the prospect of being able to have a significant impact on the lives of many, many students is a deep attraction. So if teaching 30 students is important, then having some, albeit it's distant, relationship to 2,600 students a year is a true privilege. And I would say that what brings me to it, I love understanding. And so you can pick that up in the mathematical and English background. I love understanding people. I love understanding the history of an institution, what seems to animate it, what the opportunities are for the future, and how to evaluate them. And I would say that I come with a sort of disposition of someone who doesn't want to get stuck on small things, doesn't sort of let things get to him. I'm really trying to think about the whole and how we all fit together. And so I feel like there are lots of opportunities in a small college for bringing stories together, bringing people together around ideas that are going to matter for the future.
So you're a big picture person.
Yes, absolutely. Not a micromanager at all.
Right, right. Before Carthage, you were at Sewanee. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the things you told us about Sewanee in our first interview that I think was especially fascinating is the fact that your position there, I forget, were you provost or vice?
Provost,
provost.
Yes.
That because of the way Sewanee was set up, you were actually, in effect, mayor of Sewanee. I mean, you really had to oversee all kinds of matters that the typical provost doesn't go near. Just briefly sketch that for our listeners. And I guess I'm bringing it up because it seems to me that in some ways that position and all it included was probably very valuable for you in terms of equipping you for all kinds of other things you've had to deal with maybe now as Carthage president.
That's right. The scope really was enormous. On one hand, we might be in a meeting about whether we should be marketing the e-book rights to Tennessee Williams' works. And in another meeting, we might be discussing police and fire policy. And in another one, whether we had enough parking downtown and what was a real issue of late, whether we had the right crosswalk signs.
Mm.
Now, so these are lots of different constituencies and different people, and they have different impressions of the institution. But I would say, yes, it's great training. It's that kind of work with understanding different people's points of view, understanding what they are interested in, what they're frankly not interested in, and how to come to some consensus or at least a balanced view moving forward that impresses people in the community.
Hmm. Well, and it's a lot about real life and the nuts and bolts stuff of real life, not just numbers on a blackboard or lovely words in a book. It's
That's right.
Real life and what affects real people in the course of their daily
That's right.
lives.
Yes.
When you came to Carthage, when you were offered the position of being president of Carthage, what kind of trepidation or hesitancy, if any, did you feel about accepting that invitation? I mean, obviously, you'd allowed the process to go forward, so you obviously entered the process with a certain sense of openness to the possibility. But once it had been offered to you, I'm just curious if you saw the opportunity differently.
Mm. Well, I think the fear, to the extent one has that, is really about what one doesn't know. So certainly all the information that I received and the people I'd met suggested that this was going to be a friendly and powerful environment and a collaborative part of southeastern Wisconsin that frankly has a history of doing some great things. I look at the development of Gateway. I look at the development of Parkside. I look at the redevelopment of Kenosha. So all of those to me were aspects of an environment that I would love to join. But you never know what you don't know. And, you know, even walking on campus, you see the buildings and you wonder sometimes, is everybody telling you exactly the way it is? But that's where being Midwestern is so useful. People do tell you what they think. They don't seem particularly aggressive about it all the time, as you might find in some other regions. But people really do want to have a genuine conversation about an issue. And so really there have been no surprises. I've learned more about the history, but nothing has seemed sort of out from left field.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. John Swallow, the 23rd president of Carthage College. He will be officially inaugurated as president on Saturday, April 21st. When you began, it was the summer. I wonder what that felt like. Was that actually helpful to begin your position as president at a time when the place was not by no means abandoned, but certainly not the sort of swirl of activity that it is during the course of the school year?
Well, the first thing I'll say is the summer here is absolutely beautiful. I could not believe how nice it was, the temperature, the humidity, at least along the lake, the lack of mosquitoes. So I thought, why didn't I know about Wisconsin summers before? Yeah, there's some up and down, good and bad, in starting in the summer. So you don't have the press and the full environment of the institution. We have summer programs. We have some high school students. You know, there's a lot of maintenance going on in the summer, but a lot of people are away or at conferences. And the good side of that, though, is that to drop right into everything at the moment when the semester starts might have just been too much, at least for me. And so it was an opportunity with some deliberation to meet people in town, to meet people on campus, to meet alumni in other places, and get a sense of the place here and its extent into the country through alumni that allowed me, I think, to start the semester better.
So how would you characterize these first? And I mean, you're the math major. Has it been 9 months, 10
months? 9 months, yes,
okay,
absolutely.
I was right. I was pretty much a guess, but 9 months on the job. And you've already said something to the effect that there was nothing that came out of left field as a absolute shocking surprise. That being said, how would you characterize these first 9 months of actually being president of Carthage after a fairly lengthy period of wondering what that would be like?
Sure, and it has been a journey for me. This is, of course, my first year as a college president, and so there's an aspect of trying to figure out what that means. It doesn't mean that I've found, I would say, routine at all, but there's sort of a rhythm to things, and what I've understood and thought would be important going into this, which I have now confirmed is true, is that so much of this is about relationships. The presidential position is about understanding people on campus, understanding faculty, staff, and students, understanding alumni, understanding friends and community partners, and being the place, sort of the intersection of the outside world and the campus. I think that's vital. It's something I enjoy tremendously. And then there's the part which is institutional strategy. Where can Carthage go? What can we accomplish? How can we do that together? So those are the things that I think really animate what my role is. And when it comes to learning about Carthage in these 9 months, I guess if I'm being inaugurated in a couple of weeks, it's because I've survived the probationary period. It's that Carthage has had a history of taking some bold decisions, or at least not feeling as if it had to be like every other school. And I find that tremendously exciting. And I continue to believe that that's the kind of spirit that will allow Carthage to prosper in the future. So I've been sort of making a list of different examples of how Carthage has decided to do something differently. And, of course, one was moving to Kenosha in the first place. But that's not the only one. We have other examples. For instance, we tend not, as many small colleges do, to employ a series of recent graduates who turn over frequently in our admissions office. So we take the admissions office more seriously than that because it's a very important decision for students and families to make. And so that was a decision that Carthage did long before I came. But I can affirm that as something that is distinctive and I think part of Carthage's success.
Very good. What is the typical day for President John Swallow, or is that a ludicrous notion? I mean, is each day just so vastly different from the one before and the one that follows that a typical day is there's no such thing?
Well, I can say that what is common in virtually every day is there's a lot of talking that I listen to and a lot of talking that I do. And there's some thinking along the way. I think sometimes people think that a college president spends a lot of time, you know, looking over spreadsheets and so on. But, you know, that might be one thing you do in one meeting about one topic. You know, what does the budget look like, or what are the enrollment projections? But it's certainly not what you do all day long. So it's managing and enjoying and finding ways to prosper from all the relationships that are happening, understanding all the topics of conversation on campus and off campus, and the national conversation as well. And continuing to think and encourage and lead those discussions in different places, from the board to students, to make sure that we're moving in the right direction. So it's really much more of a guiding role. That's not to say there aren't decisions, but yes, talking, lots of talking, just like we're doing here today.
Right, very good. You're good at it. And you've already begun to answer this question, which is exactly how much authority do you have as president of Carthage? I mean, what kind of authority is entrusted to you, both sort of constitutionally, officially, and maybe even sort of unofficially as well? What sorts of decisions are you empowered to make, and how many of those decisions can be, in effect, unilateral decisions that you make alone?
That's a great question, Greg. At some level, I mean, a leader has all the authority that the people with the leader want to allow that person to have. Mm. And I really think that it's important to think about it that way. There are some constitutional statements about authority, but ultimately, this is a human system. I think there are lots of examples where somebody uses their nominal authority, but in ways that are simply not appreciated by many others, and so it causes a lot of tension. So certainly I have authority to hire. I have authority over the budget. I have authority to decide the direction of the school in concert with the board. The largest decisions, certainly those that have major financial consequences, need to go before the board because that's part of their fiduciary responsibility. For instance, if we're tenuring a faculty member, that's a very long-term commitment. If we are building a building, if we are issuing bonds, those are things that we – all the way to the board level, we need to be in alignment on. But when it comes to the operation of the enterprise, those things that you might think of as less strategic and more operational, then the president would have authority to execute those. And that's the kind of notion of the executive officer. However, there are spheres of influence. And when it comes to the faculty, particularly when it comes to the curriculum, it's vital that the faculty be on board and that we all have talked through it and that there are endorsements and approvals along the way. Higher education is one of those fascinating industries of what you might call shared governance. And so respecting that, but more than respecting it, I would say encouraging its successful execution, which is hard, is, I think, also one of the roles of the president, is to try to find ways that those processes can be healthy. Rather than lots of processes where people find ways to disagree or take votes, but no one's actually satisfied. What we really want is to find processes that help all of us move forward together and feel good about it.
Hmm. We're speaking with Dr. John Swallow, president of Carthage College. We're speaking about a week and a half before Dr. Swallow is inaugurated as Carthage's 23rd president. I want to talk with you about Carthage as a liberal arts institution. Ahead of that, I actually want to speak in even more general terms and just talk about the sphere of higher education that you were just touching on, and the fact that we are living now in a time in which a fairly sizable swath of the American population seems to view the whole notion of higher education and many of the people who work there and come from there in relatively suspicious and sometimes even disdainful terms. And I think it is probably correct to say that a lot of those attitudes, in fact, have been there for a long time, again, with a certain size of the population, but some of those views have never been expressed so clearly or forthrightly as they are right now. What do you make of that? What do you think is going on there? And for those of us who live and work in the realm of higher education, what do we need to do about that?
Mm-hmm. I've really been struck by this recent perception of, and it's not that it hasn't been there, but the extent to which it's prevalent now that higher education should be distrusted is something that we have to face now. I would put that in a context of living today in a society where many institutions are not as trusted as they were, whether it's Congress, big business, the media. I mean, polling shows that fewer and fewer Americans are trusting any of those. Those that tend to still have majority support would be the military, churches, and it's sort of on the balance here, but colleges and universities taken together. But it's important to recognize that a lot of people are skeptical about a lot of things, about the direction of the country and the direction of our institutions. When it comes to colleges, I think we have not done a tremendously good job making the case for why we're here. So everyone understands that young people should be educated and older people as well. But for what? What is the point? And it is not enough for colleges to step back and say, well, we don't need to answer that question. We've got it. Please send your children to us, and it all will work out in the end. I think for a place like Carthage, educating students broadly and at the same time preparing them for the lives that they will lead has been what is at the core of what we do. But I would say more recently, more people want to hear details and they want to hear outcomes about how preparing students for the lives that they're going to leave means the ability to get a job, that shouldn't be an issue. I mean, I think it's a fair question. If someone spends a lot of money educating their child for 4 years and that takes their child a year to find a professional job, then that's a legitimate question. Like, what went wrong? And there may be lots of circumstances. So I think we need to do a good job expressing how the education we provide and the majors in traditional disciplines and the majors in what we think of today as more pre-professional disciplines are all those that are enabling students to meet their passion and to find a long and satisfying career or at least series of jobs so that they can live a productive and meaningful life. So there's been more of a focus. I think there's less trust that the disciplines by themselves are going to get the job done and that we need to think about the experience holistically and make sure that it's all integrated so that they can go from graduation to employment without a hiccup.
Mm. You're touching on some complicated questions here that are certainly worth exploring. One of them is that aforementioned question about the liberal arts, which we'll get to in a moment. But this was maybe as good an opportunity as any for you to talk about something that I think you have had some hand in proposing, that in which the whole notion of career development at Carthage might be approached in a little different way, maybe in more sort of concerted fashion, in fashion that is a little better coordinated amongst various entities within the college. Tell us at least at this relatively early stage some of what you hope might happen in this respect at Carthage.
Sure. We've been doing a lot of thinking this year with really a wonderful task force, accumulating a lot of information from other schools and from our own ideas on the notion of what should we do to prepare students fully so they're fully capable of entering the workforce. Another way I might say that is virtually all of us are going to spend our lives in organizations. A few of us might be blessed enough to be entrepreneurs and we can work for ourselves. There are some artists that can pull that off as well, but even those folks are going to be interacting with organizations. So what does that mean in terms of a student being prepared to enter an organization? Well, there should be some interviewing skills, certainly. There should be a background to talk about. But there can also be other aspects that are very attractive to those organizations. To be able to demonstrate teamwork, to be able to demonstrate maybe an entrepreneurial approach, to be able to communicate well, to not only analyze a situation, which I think we do well in so many of our disciplines and courses, but to be able to translate that quickly to something that is meaningful to the person asking the question. So there are communication skills, oral communication skills, written communication skills, and a focus on that allows us to derive all the benefit from what we might think of as the traditional liberal arts, but ensure that those students are able to carry that all the way through to their entry into an organization.
Hmm. So towards that end, what would be some of the more concrete ways in which this would look different at Carthage?
Right. Well, we would love to be able to say, and I hope we will be able to say soon, that every student will be able to have an internship or other experiential learning opportunity. So this is one where we don't talk abstractly about what it's like to be in an organization. You're in an organization, and we can reflect on your experience there. What was it like? How did you interact with others? What were you asked to do? What might you have thought was a good idea that turned out to be a pretty terrible idea in how you're working with others? We would like all students to have experience in leadership training, to think about others in their own leadership and those students themselves in theirs. Entrepreneurship and creativity, to ask, you're gaining lots of skills and capacities through your courses, and yes, you're even being pushed in research projects, but what would it look like to push even further, or to take a question that frankly doesn't fit easily into any of your courses or any of the disciplines, perhaps not even in a particularly interdisciplinary way because it's just a big question, and then how to wrestle with it? Because that's the experience of a lot of people in organizations. Sometimes the expertise is the easy part, and that's not to say that it doesn't require a lot of time and effort. But then you're presented with a question like, where should this organization even go? And you want a liberal arts person to be able to bring lots to that and then communicate the results of that. So those are some of the aspects, and certainly we would want the more practical characteristics of being able to interview well, being able to communicate one's background well, so that that's a seamless transition.
Right. When we were talking about this at the division level, so in my division, which is the arts and humanities, one of the things we were struck with is how not every major is the same, and how certain majors already, some of this is happening. And so in some respects, for certain parts of the college, there's probably not quite so much that even needs to happen. It's already built into their experience. And then there's other areas, other departments or disciplines where this probably is going to require some rethinking and some imagining of new possibilities.
That's right. That's right. It's important to recognize that in any system like a academic community, lots of people are doing lots of different things, and that's part of the joy of it. Not all disciplines are the same. They don't communicate the same way. Some emphasize more analysis. Some emphasize more creativity. Some emphasize more different frames of thinking, what we would call interdisciplinary. How do you wrestle with a question from multiple points of view, knowing that that each point of view is not going to arrive at the same answer? And so all of our departments, all of our disciplines do them to different extents, and that's a great thing. The idea of this comprehensive career development program would be to ensure that one way or another, all students access all of those things. Mm. And so, yes, some students will have an easier pathway based on what they're taking. Some of these ideas and skills may be delivered already in courses we offer. And then for ones that are not, then we can provide something in addition at different points of the year, perhaps during J-term, to ensure that the students are fully capable when they graduate.
Very good. We're speaking with Dr. John Swallow, president of Carthage College, and he is being inaugurated as Carthage's 23rd president on Saturday, the 21st of April. Carthage is a liberal arts school, and one of the very intense discussions that is going on right now within Carthage itself is what a liberal arts education should look like in 2018 and beyond. And the school is confronting some intriguing, but also to some extent maybe disconcerting possibilities of changing kind of the slant of things. So I think this is a good opportunity for us to hear from you in terms of some of your thoughts about a liberal arts education. And maybe we should actually start in as basic a place as just trying to define that a little bit for the sake of anybody listening who maybe hears that term thrown around a lot, but doesn't understand how a liberal arts education at Carthage is distinctly different from the education they might receive at a place like Parkside or Gateway.
That's right. When I think about the liberal arts, I'm really taken with some ideas of a friend and philosopher named William Sullivan that doesn't start with this notion of subjects and disciplines, but simply says, what are the things that a broadly educated person ought to wrestle with? And there aren't that many, but they're very important. So one is that there should be a domain in which that person really wrestles with analysis and sort of a technical understanding. That can happen in lots of domains. It can happen in mathematics. It could happen in English literature. It could happen in nursing. A person ought to be able to wrestle, as we talked about earlier, with multiple perspectives on the same phenomenon or subject. This is what life looks like. This is what living in society looks like. There's politics, there's economics, there's a kind of moral approach that different people will have. And they won't end in the same place. A broadly educated person has to engage those things. I would also say that there's it's important for a person to wrestle some with moral reasoning. So what is what's important to the person? What are their values? We might disagree on what those values are, but every person will express values over the course of their life, whether they've thought about it or not, and it would be better to think about it and discuss it with others. And then finally, I would say there's this aspect of just kind of practical work. How do we get a project done? What are the steps along the way? Well, what's a deadline? How do we work with others? That all of these things are important for all of us. So if we can start there and say that that's what we want a broadly educated person to be able to do, that seems fully appropriate for an undergraduate, then we could say, how has that been taught over time? And I would say that going back to the 19th century, we have disciplines, mathematics, English literature, we have social sciences, we have sciences, all of which have done that in one form or another. There are projects, that's where you get your practical aspect. There's certainly analysis in all of those. I would say that some of those have a more interdisciplinary feel than others. And some of them, not all of them, wrestle with some questions of value. And so what we think of as the traditional liberal arts disciplines, those 19th century sort of codified approaches of ways of thinking, those are a historic attempt to how to educate students well within a discipline, but getting at those deeper questions. I would also say that over time, there are other ways to do those same deep things with emerging disciplines. If I were to ask myself, what is a nursing student at Carthage doing? There will be a number of liberal arts courses, traditional liberal arts courses. But even the nursing aspect that some think of as terribly pre-professional involves the same sort of analysis and technique that you would do in a math class. Hmm. You're going to study what makes a difference to patients. That's research. That's asking some evidence-based questions, and you want evidence-based answers. And so that sort of work, and then the application of it in particular circumstances is going to feel, in my mind, like applying some mathematical techniques to a particular problem. And so I don't see those as so far apart. It's true that it's a lot easier to identify the career path of somebody who's taking nursing than it might be someone who's taking a math major, which may have lots of options. But I don't see them as fundamentally different. Now, I would want all of these things to be taught in a very broad way and not a hyper-specialized way. But I think there are ways that the true spirit of the liberal arts can come through lots of different disciplines or departments.
Right. I'm thinking about, for instance, when I taught opera history this past fall. It was really intriguing, and I think probably to some extent it could have even been more true than it turned out to be, but even just an isolated course like that is about so much more than music. It's about so much more than opera. It's about all kinds of historical factors and philosophical factors and political history and all kinds of other things that get drawn into a really rich and yet restricted area, let alone some of the other courses that are relatively broad to begin with. There are some real opportunities there. And I think what you're saying is a place like Carthage values that sort of wider perspective, even when you are teaching something that is relatively narrow in its specific focus.
That's right. That's right.
So one of the choices then ends up being made is what should the balance be in terms of one's major versus what one takes with general education classes versus electives that are purely their own choice. And that's, of course, what the college at the moment is wrestling with. As we were chatting about it before we went on the air, you used a phrase I thought that was interesting about the tyranny of the or, O-R. Just explain what that phrase means to you and its applicability to this particular question.
Sure. I got this from Freeman Hrabowski, the president of the University of Maryland at Baltimore County, who gave a very inspiring speech recently, and he was talking about the same sort of thing. And so I've been reflecting on it. So on one hand, every time we have to make a decision, it feels like an or. Either we accept the proposal or we reject the proposal. And so there's a kind of dichotomousness to everything. And yet, the world is not full of ors. It's really full of ands.
Hmm.
If we think about, and it's not that we're all equal or that we all need to do the same thing. If we think about the breadth of opportunity at a place like Carthage, we have many, many disciplines and departments. Students are doing different things. Faculty are doing different things. And so the tyranny of the or would be to say, does every person need to be doing A or B? And I would say, well, maybe some should be doing A and some should be doing B. That's just fine. In fact, that's the wondrous breadth of an academic community, and I would say of society itself. And so, yes, we need to have a framework for our education for students. We have to understand what the system is in place. And yet, we don't want to try to make everyone do precisely the same thing because people are not precisely the same. And, we, and we don't want to frame it as an or. I would like to frame it as an and. We have 2,600 students, many of whom are doing different and highly valuable things and are things that are just perfect for them.
Hmm. So at this point in time, in 2018, how would you characterize where Carthage is positioned, its own health as an institution and its prospects for the future?
Well, I've been delighted to have confirmed what I suspected when I was coming, which is that Carthage is a strong and healthy institution, which, like many institutions, particularly colleges, small colleges, are going to be facing some very difficult challenges in the next 5 to 10 years. So Carthage starts from a position of strength, say financially and in terms of physical plants and in terms of the faculty, certainly. But the demographics are out there. There will simply be fewer college-going high school students than there were before. We've known this for some time. I mean, you can sort of look at birth rates from some time ago and make some predictions. But it's certainly coming. It's certainly true in the Midwest. It'll be true in the Northeast. So there will be fewer students. And then the question is, well, what will we do about that? Will we just wait and see if it happens to us too? Students will go missing somewhere, and maybe we'll just believe that they'll go missing elsewhere. But this is where I think that Carthage is not only strong in terms of its financial situation and the people that are working for it and the physical plant, but it has a history of engaging some of these difficult questions over time and coming up with great responses. I worry the most about institutions that have an organizational culture where they believe that exactly one thing works, and they worked that out 100 years ago, and that's just what they're going to keep doing. Carthage has been more nimble, so it's unusual among liberal arts colleges for that. It was nimble in moving to Kenosha, certainly, but it's been nimble in other ways. It's been nimble in the disciplines that it offers, and it's, I think, resistance to the notion that it simply must be like everyone else. So that's something I really want to draw upon. We may need new programs. I would be surprised if we don't have more programs. I would say the career development initiative that's underway now, that's proposed, offers a chance for Carthage to be distinctive, more distinctive, and to continue to enroll substantial numbers of students that make it the strong and healthy place that it is. So it's that ongoing consideration of what can we do that's always true to who we've been, but can really match what's happening now for the next decade, next couple of decades, that positions Carthage so well for the future. And that's why I'm so proud to be a part of it.
Hmm. So your inauguration is coming up on Saturday, April 21st, as we've already touched on, and there are all kinds of events that are going to go on to help make that celebration even more grand and exciting. Remind our listeners about some of the special guests that that are coming to Carthage to be part of all of the excitement, guests that you hope many of our listeners will take the opportunity to hear and meet.
Well, first on the Thursday night, so that would be the 19th, my good friend and nationally known mathematician and what I would say is communicator, Tim Chartier, will be coming. Tim and Tanya Chartier have a background in mime, and Tim's done some amazing work, certainly writing books, certainly doing some mathematical research, but also thinking about how to communicate mathematical concepts through mime, something that most people wouldn't attempt. And so he has a wonderful show that he's going to come and present. On Friday, my friend and novelist Adam Ross, who's the new editor of the Sewanee Review, a very old literary quarterly, he and I will discuss a George Saunders novel, Lincoln in the Bardo, which is current, which has won prizes, and makes reference to one of Carthage's early trustees, Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
And so I thought this would be a wonderful way to engage something literary in the context of his visit, in the context of students as well, as part of the celebration of Carthage and the celebration, frankly, of the liberal arts as well. So that will happen Friday evening. And then on Saturday, during the ceremony itself, John McArdle, the president at Sewanee, will speak before my remarks. And he will speak on the importance of residential liberal arts education generation after generation.
Hmm. And we probably should just mention that this coming Friday, which is the weekend before the inauguration, is an inaugural ball designed to kick everything off.
That's right. I'm not sure whether it's the president's inaugural ball or the inaugural president's ball. We haven't had a ball like this in a while. But this is a way close to the inauguration to have an event that involves lots of students and faculty and staff together.
Wonderful. So all of this information and much more can be found on Carthage's website, carthage.edu, and it's probably especially helpful to click on the link there for the bridge, in which full calendar of events can be found, not only about the president's inauguration, but everything else that goes on at Carthage involving the arts and athletics and guest speakers and much, much more. Well, President Swallow, it's been a great pleasure to reconnect with you today and to talk with you about all these interesting facets of Carthage and your work there. And we're glad that so much of your family can be part of the festivities with your inauguration, both your children and, of course, your wife, Cameron, the First Lady of Carthage, and her parents and your parents.
That's
and
right.
Lots of other friends for the big celebration on Saturday, April 21st. And in the midst of all the excitement, I appreciate you making time for the morning show, and very best wishes to you. I feel very grateful that you are part of this community and part of Carthage, and I know lots of other people join me in feeling great gratitude about that. So,
well, thank you. It's been great to be with you, Greg.
Super. Dr. John Swallow, our guest today on the morning show. Tomorrow, it will be Nan Calvert with her monthly environmental program. And on Friday, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, will be our guest. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org. And we are going to be making way for a special news conference that is going to be airing at the top of the hour from U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan, who is expected to announce that he is not running for re-election. So we will make way for that. Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that is what brings you back, newly reimagined for 2018. Information at jackandrea.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. The time is 8:58.
It is 9 o'clock. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. NPR News and Classical Music on your gateway to public radio. We'll pick up Wisconsin Public Radio's programming a little bit later on in the hour. We'll have NPR News coming up in about 45 seconds. They will be covering the major news event of the morning. It looks like Paul Ryan is going to make an announcement here shortly that he will not run for re-election in November. Quick check on the forecast from the National Weather Service. Partly sunny, breezy, and mild.